Welcome to TJ Slideways Live, courtesy of racesontheweb.com. Here is your host, TJ Buffenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Another jam-packed evening tonight. Coming to you live here from the Engine Pro Studios just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. You can interact with the show via our Twitter account at TJ Slideways, our Facebook fan page for TJSlideways.com, also via email, TJ@TJSlideways.com. Later on in the program, we're going to talk to James McFadden about his big win on Sunday night against the All-Star Circuit of Champions over at the Fremont Speedway. Also, Joe Bears a little later in the program discussing his victory you saw right here on RacesOnTheWeb.com from Crystal Motor Speedway Sunday night with the Michigan Traditional Sprints. And then Scott Stein and I will break down the 2014 Payless Little 500 later in the program. But my first guest got his Memorial Day weekend started basically like he started his racing season in victory lane. He's won the Hoosier 100, obviously, on Thursday, the Sumar Classic to kick off the Silver Crown Series season, and then on top of it scored a $5,000 to win Boss Sprint Car feature win over at the Fremont Speedway. And Cody Swanson, I'm assuming at this point we have shedded the pavement guy label, wouldn't you say?
I don't know. I'm just willing to go with it, embrace it, and just have fun racing like we are.
So, I wanted to talk.
They want to call me a pavement guy. That doesn't bother me at all.
It doesn't bother you, which is good. But when you get labeled something like that, how hard is it to shed that label when you're a driver?
Oh, it's been tough, for sure. But part of it was because, when I first got back here and started running on dirt, I struggled quite a bit more than I was on the pavement. And, so I guess it kind of fit because it was true a little bit. So, lately though, I've had some opportunities to try to get better on dirt. And that's all I'm trying to do is just trying to get better. And, to work with Bob Hampshire has been a huge help. And we've got started, pretty well this year.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guy to get hooked up with. How did you and Hamp get together?
Yeah, well, last year I started talking to the De Palma family about their pavement Silver Crown car. They already had an existing program with a driver to run the dirt portion of the Silver Crown season, and I got started just trying to be the pavement guy, embracing the title that I'd been given, and talked him into letting me work with them a little bit, and we had some fun. You know, they struggled a little bit on the pavement beforehand and weren't necessarily interested in doing it, but talking them to give me a chance and getting to work with them, we really had a lot of fun together. You know, we got we got three top five finishes in three races, you know, a pair of seconds and a pair of pole position qualifying runs. So, we really had fun working together last year, and then the opportunity arose this season. They let me know they had an opening in the dirt portion of their Silver Crown schedule and wanted to know if I wanted to run with them and run for the championship. And so, I definitely jumped at that opportunity. And this is the first time I've been working with Hamp on the dirt. It's been this season. And so far, it's been a lot of fun together.
Cody Swanson joining us. And not only with the Silver Crown car, but you've added the Sprint car to the stable there over there. I heard that might happen last year, and it's come to fruition this year. And you guys have been racing that thing quite a bit. I've seen your name over at Waynesfield. We saw you at Eldora at the opener for the USAC Sprint Car Series. And then you picked up a $5,000 to win Boss Sprint Car victory over at the Fremont Speedway. Let's talk about that a little bit. How awesome was that for you to pick up that big Sprint car went over there?
Oh, that was definitely very cool. You know, it was a great opportunity. That race is the Mike Hensel Memorial. The Hensel family supports non-wing dirt sprint car racing, and so that was a great event to be a part of and a lot of fun. Hamps obviously had a lot of success there at Fremont, and when he found that on the schedule, he thought, hey, what? That should be fun. We should go over and give that a shot. And I'm definitely glad we did. But that sprint car, really, we tease that's just our driver's training program. That the sole existence of me running that sprint car for them was just to get more laps and to get comfortable on dirt, so that way I could be better for them. And in the Dirt Silver Crown Series, that's our main focus this year is competing for that championship. And so, very thankful to those guys for being willing to put that together and go through the extra effort that we did here at the beginning of the season. You know, we went down to Florida, to the USAC openers down there, and just tried to get laps when we could and when it made sense. And so, so far, you know, it's definitely helped me get the cobwebs knocked off and try to get more and more comfortable here on the dirt surface. And, so far it's been paying off on the Silver Crown side of things.
How many more times do you think the driver's training program is going to be out this year?
I don't know. We were talking about that after Fremont, that was really the last one we had circled on the schedule. You know, we talked about just trying to find races that made sense, you know, you know, I imagine when the Dirt Silver Crown series kicks back up, you know, because I think for the next 2 months we're pretty much on pavement only. I don't think we run the dirt car again until Belleville at the 1st of August. And I'm sure, you know, that we may see it back out again right around then, just to help get back in the swing of things before we go out to Belleville. But I hope we get to run it some more. We've definitely had some fun with that car, and I hope we're not done with the year with that just yet.
Thursday night, that was a huge deal. Winning the Hoosier 100 in the middle of everything going around in Indianapolis, surrounding the Indianapolis 500. That's become one of the trademark events now, moved to Thursday, so it kind of stands on its own. Let's talk about the Hoosier 100 a little bit and how you managed to get up front there in the 100 lapper.
Yeah, I mean, I've been able to run that race for a few years now, and it's just a honor to be able to run in a race that that has the history that it does, and you know that really links our series, you know, back to the heyday of the sport, and that's something that I think is just really cool in itself. But this year, you know, we had a great run there at Terre Haute and went into the Hoosier 100 knowing that I typically am better at the miles than I am at the short tracks, and thinking that we had a good shot to go and compete well there. And, you know, I qualified eighth, but you only get one lap qualifying. And usually I do a better job of hitting it in that one lap, but I missed it. And so I told Bob and the crew that, hey, I definitely know you guys a few spots. We're better than that already. And, you know, I'd like to look forward to run a 100-mile race, you know. And we were able to get a few spots there early and get up to third, I think, for Mason. And probably just 10 or 15 laps, but there's where it got quite a bit tougher. You know, Tracy Hines, he's the guy that doesn't make many mistakes, if any. And so with the way the track conditions were, it was definitely hard to get a run on him. And I was kind of forced just to saddle in there and ride for a little bit throughout the middle part of the race. And as we got past halfway, I was starting to get nervous, but that I would never have an opportunity to get going. But luckily, just a little bit after that, you know, we started to encounter some lap traffic. Some of the things I was battling earlier with the track conditions started to kind of finally change for us, and the 63 really came to life, and we were able to get rolling. And you know, once we got Tracy, able to run down Bobby and get to the lead. So it was definitely a lot of fun there.
What does, you know, Hamp's had a lot of success in the Silver Crown Series. What's different about the car with him wrenching on it compared to maybe some of the other experiences you've had? Because you've run for good teams, but something about Hampshire and those dirt miles, man, that he has that deal completely figured out, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, so far, he's been an absolute pleasure to work with on the dirt. You know, for me, I'm gonna go ahead and accept it here. For me, being a pavement guy, it's been great knowing that he can watch the racetrack, and make his adjustments off a little feedback that I give him. And I'm not having to wonder or worry about if we need to be adjusting the shock or changing weight or moving the tire. I can just give him the little information that I can and let him run with it. And just, I guess for right now, you know, I have that complete faith in him that car is going to be the best that it can be. And I only got to worry about, making the right decisions as a driver. And so far that's been a huge help just to be able to focus on that part of the thing, you know, just watching track conditions as they change, feeling what I need to do, from inside the race car to make the car do what we need it to do, and just, focus on that aspect of it and getting it done. So
I don't think you need to own that label anymore. You win a Hoosier 100 and a $5,000 to win non-wing sprint car race on dirt. I think you can get rid of the label now. Cody Swanson joining us on the line. You've done a variety of different things the past few years. You've done some wing pavement racing, some other stuff. What other things are on your schedule this year?
Just trying to race as much as I can, you know. With pavement sprint cars going the direction that they had, if you're going to continue racing those, it seems like you got to run with the wing on. If you're going to race regularly, and so been fortunate to team up with Tom Bird and Speed Chasers crew doing that, and we've had a little success there at the end of last year, and that's been something that I had to get adjusted to as well. Is how much different the racing is with the wing on versus growing up without it. And so playing some of that here this summer, as well as I know you mentioned you run at Waynesfield a little bit. I got to do that last summer as well with Kent Walters, guy at Tip City, Ohio, that really gave me a chance to get going on dirt the last couple of years, and hope to be able to run his car.
Looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine. Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com. The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump-stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
Welcome back to TJ Flyways Live here at racesontheweb.com. My next guest won in his second start in the United States this year, his first time ever seeing the Fremont Speedway with the UNOH All-Star Circuit of Champions. And James McFadden, you definitely know how to join the party with a splash. Congratulations on the big win on Sunday.
Thanks, mate. It's good to be in America, and it's obviously good to start the season off like we have.
First of all, let's talk about Fremont. You had never seen it before, but you managed to score a top five finish and a victory there in two nights of racing. Is there any track that you could compare it to, maybe in Australia a little bit, or was it something completely different for you?
Size-wise, I guess it's about the same size as we've got back home, but the whole shape and how slick it is nothing like we have, so it was a lot to get my head around, especially trying to keep the tire under it, because, yeah, I've never raced on anything as slick as that.
And how much does it help? Because you are hooked up with the 3G car. You've got Joe Gertie, who's on there, a former driver, and also Tim Norman, who's also a former driver. How is it to have a couple of different guys that have been in the seat before to maybe help you get up to speed?
Yeah, that's huge. You know, Joe and Tim obviously have a lot of experience around this area, and you know, every little tip they've given me is something that I don't have to learn on the track. So obviously it speeds up the process of me getting up to speed. So yeah, they've been a huge help, and we've pretty much gelled straight away, which is, you know, the biggest key in a race team, I think.
And Saturday night, you got Dale Boyd, he got out front, but you did manage to pass him a couple laps into the race. Why don't you talk about how you managed to set up Blaney for the pass?
Yeah, we just got a good run coming out of turn. We're able to slide by him there. Yeah, it was really, really tough to get the bottom coming out of two. There was a hole in one. So, yeah, we were just lucky enough that we got that right and, yeah, able to hold him off for the whole race, which was really good.
Was the open run a little bit unnerving when you're up front there and all of a sudden you have to stop for fuel?
Yeah, obviously I'm not 100% with all your rules over here, so I wasn't sure what you're allowed to do with the car and that, so I was it was a bit, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen after the red light there, and I thought they might have tuned their car up a little more or something, so... Yeah, it was a little unnerving, and I really didn't know what was going on. But Joe said I was hitting the right marks and where I needed to be, so I just tried to do that for the rest of the laps.
And how has the fan reception been for you since coming over to the U.S. last year and this year?
Yeah, really good. Obviously, this is the first time I've raced with a lot of these guys and in front of a lot of these fans. But yeah, they were. Really good with me at the end of the race there, and I had a lot of people coming up and saying hello, so yeah, really making me feel welcome, which is good.
Now, how did the discussion start about you driving the 3G car for this season?
Last year, you know, we just travelled through here. Tim with XYZ helped us out a bit in Australia there. We run his stuff, so, you know, we just came by here and visit him, say g'day, and yeah, I guess from there it went. Now I just got a phone call, and it was pretty much the most surprising phone call I've ever had. So it was quite humbling for me. I was pretty excited at the time, and yeah, it was a big surprise.
And how this year you are also not only coming over here, but you're coming over here with a familiar race car. You guys are using a cool chassis again. How much does that maybe help with the learning curve as well? Some of the new tricks that you're in a race car that you're somewhat familiar with.
Yeah, obviously, your tyres and wings are different, so the whole feel of the car is still a little different to Australia, but, you know, just to sit in a car that I'm sitting in the exact same position, the throttle, the brake, everything's in the same position as my car, so it just makes that whole confidence level a little bit further up, and I can get out the car and kind of give solid feedback back because I know what the cars can do, so... Obviously, these guys have had success in that and with a cool chassis as well, so they've got a good base set up, and it's easy to work from there.
Chris James McFadden joining us here on TJ Sideways Live. Now, you're in America for your second time. When you came over last year for the first time, was there any one particular non-racing thing you just wanted to do while you're here you managed to accomplish? Something you wanted to see?
Not really. You know, I've always just wanted to race over here. That's the biggest thing I've ever wanted to do. So I haven't really had time to do any sightseeing or anything like that. So if we get some time, I wouldn't mind going to have a look at some things.
Obviously, James McFadden, business, focused on the business at hand, coming over here to America for the second year in a row. Is this something eventually you want to build and maybe become like a full-time World of Outlaw driver and then go back over to Australia for your warm season? Is that eventually a goal down the road, or do you want to continue maybe doing like what you're doing now where you come over during our peak months and then go back home and do a full season over there?
At this stage, I'm not 100% sure. I've got a very good ride back home and, you know, great support there. So, yeah, it's hard for me to tell, you know. It's a hard deal over here. It's a little bit different to home and a lot more cutthroat. You know, if you're not performing, you got to unbolt your seat and find another ride. So back home, I've got a lot of ride security. So it's hard to know, but, you know, I'm pretty happy where I am right now. These guys have welcomed me, and I feel very comfortable in the car, and I'm liking where I'm at. So time will tell, I guess.
That sounds good there. On your trip last year, what tracks made the biggest impression on you? Were probably the most surprising or maybe the most eye-opening during your racing experience last year during your American tour?
For me, definitely any half mile, because I've never really done it. Eldora and Williamsgrove for me were eye-openers. You know, I got out of the car and really didn't know what to tell anyone because I hadn't felt what the car was doing like that before. So, yeah, it's anything half mile is tough for me to get my head around, and because obviously we have nothing like that in Australia. So it's hard. It's a whole new learning experience, and the cars feel completely different.
And one other thing about the, you did the trip here. Did anything, you mentioned the tires and the wings are different. Did that, were you able though to gain anything from your American experience you were able to apply to your Australian season this past winter?
Oh yeah, for sure. Every time you get in the car, you're learning something and you can take something from that race. So the more seat time you get, the better you're going to be. So I think, for sure, it helps me coming over here, and it helps me racing in Australia and coming over here as well, because I stay in the car as much as I can. So it's, yeah, every time I hit the track, it's a learning experience, so it's good.
And you mentioned that you do have a secure ride back at home. What are your plans for the 2014-2015 season over in Australia?
We'll, you know, we only did 32 races in Australia this year, so we're going to try and get close to 50. And then, yeah, hopefully do World Series again, and, you know, do all the big Blue Ribbon events and as many local shows as we can on the way through. So we're going to try and probably have the biggest season our team has had. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be good.
James McFadden joining us. How excited are you to be able to do the Knoxville Nationals on this trip?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, Knoxville Nationals is obviously something that I've always looked at doing and been fortunate enough to have done it. So, yeah, to go there and with some confidence, you know, that we've had and hopefully going there a few times before the Nationals so I can get some laps in is going to be huge. Obviously, the biggest goal is to make the show, and I think I've got a very good chance with the equipment that I've got.
Now, last year at Knoxville with the format and everything, how intimidating is that for a driver when you first go through those gates and you see all those cars and everything? Or did you just try to approach it as another race last year when you did it with the 55 crew?
Yeah, I just tried to approach it as another race. As much as you try to do that, it's still the Knoxville Nationals. You know, it's the biggest race in the world for our sport. So it's hard not to think about it, and yeah, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it all comes down to those two laps at the start of the night, and it's just a whole different way of racing over here, and it's good. I like it. I just can't wait to do it again.
Well, race fans, you'll be able to see him Friday night at Attic Raceway Park and Saturday over at I-96 Speedway. And, James, I have to ask you, you know, because we got to keep you guys on the road. Are fans going to be able to pick up a James McFadden T-shirt at Attica or I-96 if they go?
Yeah, we should have them. I should have them this week. So we'll have T-shirts there and, come down and say hello and we'll sell you a shirt for sure.
And make sure, because we got to keep this guy over here as long as we can and on the road and keep him eating. So make sure to pick up a T-shirt while you're at Attica 996. Well, James, congratulations on the big win Saturday. We're glad to have you over here in the States for the summer and look forward to working with you throughout the entire summer months right up to Knoxville.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, and it's awesome to be in the States, living a dream right now.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, James, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. James McFadden joining us on the line here on TJ Slideways Live. And I met him last year. That's actually quite a bit more animated than the first time we met, but he was very focused at the task on hand. Very nice, though, young man that I've had opportunity to talk to a couple of times. And what an addition to our sprint car scene to have he's probably one of the two or three hottest sprint car drivers in Australia, and he's going to be in this area basically throughout the entire summer, man. It's just another good team, another good race car driver to have out on the circuit. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, Scott Stein and I are going to break down the 2014 Payless Little 500. You're listening to TJ Slideways Live here on racesontheweb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump-stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing in racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement, and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air as Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth. Watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rocket around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
Welcome back to TJ Sideways Live here on racesontheweb.com. And, taking the co-pilot seat for a segment with me to break down the 2014 Payless Little 500, Must See Racing announcer Scott Stein joining me on the line. And Scott, we saw a pretty entertaining race on Saturday that just featured a roller coaster ride of highs and lows for various teams.
Absolutely, yeah, it was. It was a night of managing setbacks and capitalizing on others' misfortunes. A lot of guys getting involved in things early. I believe we had actually three leaders taken out of the event. I'm not sure if that's an official stat, but I do believe the leader was either the cause of the caution or crashed out of the event three different times Saturday night.
And a couple of them before the 100 lap mark was the crazy thing. It was just, and there were two of the people you'd expect, you would never expect to be taken out that early. One thing I noticed right off the bat, man, we had beautiful weather on Saturday, and I think that's probably in my 10 or so little 500s, that might be the biggest crowd I've ever seen there on Saturday.
I know you're absolutely right, and I know for a fact that one of the office staff came down on the front stretch to Rick Dawson and told Rick, we've got to find more places to park cars. We're out of places, and they ended up parking people, I believe, behind turn two and kind of short hopping them up around the lounge up on the hill and around that way to get people in. Yes, there was a lot of people there, and the weather was absolutely postcard perfect. We had people from every state in the union and two or three foreign countries there. I mean, just a lot of good hard, you know, race fans there for a great night of racing.
And it turned out great. And early on in the race, Aaron Pierce jumped out. You can see that Pierce and Clausen were kind of pulling away from everyone else initially, and then unfortunately Pierce's race went south about lap 44.
Yes, it did. He was down there in turns three. He was under pressure. And down there in three and four in the car, I don't know if there was contact or what it was, but he went up the hill there, and he parked just past the track exit there on the turn four side as the leader of the race. He was the first leader to be taken out or to, you know, to cause a caution and get a DNF. I know he was absolutely dejected on it. Those guys are some of the most prepared for pit stops and things like that, and to be taken out that early, it was a long night in the infield for the 2016.
Yeah, and that's one thing, when you have a crew and you've practiced the pit stops, to not make it to that first pit stop is just crushing for that team. All that work you put into it, and then you don't even get to show how your preparation pays off.
Yeah, you're right. That, and you know, besides the fact of having a ruined, you know, wrecked race car, hurt parts, you know, all you can do is just sit there and kind of watch the laps tick off, and just, you know, just watch everybody else have the fun. Maybe a couple guys can go help out here and there or things like that. But for the most part, it's just a pretty miserable night. I've been on the receiving end of that before.
Yeah, and right after Jared Andretti's finding the wall, Clausen was up front, and he was looking pretty stout up front. And then all of a sudden, it fell apart. I mean, getting tangled up with a lap car over in turn two, and he went from pretty much being what looked like the prime person being contention to win the race to four laps down.
Yeah, he and Tom Patterson got together. I didn't get to see that exactly take place. I was looking the other way when that happened, but it looked like it was just a racing thing. Tom, you know, is not one of the upper contending cars, but he's one that's out there and knows how to stay out of the way and that kind of thing. And it just looked like the pace got to him, and they got together. Both of them got damaged in the situation, but then I think Brian had that situation, and then later on in the event, there was something else happened with the race car that cost him some time as well when he just started backing up through the field.
Yeah, actually, he lost the brakes in the car.
Yeah.
So at that point.
Yeah.
And then yep. From there, unfortunately, got tangled up with the car you were spotting for, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the breakdown here. And right after Clausen went out, Billy Weiss had an incident. That's another driver that I would have considered now contention. But that caution on lap 147 kind of set up something that someone had let me in on before the race. They didn't really want me telling it, and that's the short pit. And it's mm-hmm. something I was surprised how many people took advantage of. Cottle short-pitted, Helberg, and also Dottie Adam Jr. on 147. Now, usually I'd think of the pit window between 200 and 250, but they chose to come in on 147.
Yeah, and actually we did that as well, because we looked at the pressure that our side of the pit lane was going to have and realized that we were going to be in an advantage at that point to take that. We had actually warped the brake rotor on the 81 car early, And so we wanted to get in, check tire wear, having to compensate for that brake rotor. But we short pitted or early opportunity, I guess you could say, at that 147 mark or somewhere around there as well, to try to get in and just get a look at the car and beat the rush that was going to come in that later segment, because we just kind of felt like maybe the pace of the event was going to change and we might go for a long green flag run. Never really happened last night or Saturday night. We had a lot of cautions throughout the event, not a lot of green flag pit stops, but we were just afraid that if we didn't take that chance, we would be stuck behind the eight ball at that point. A lot of the leaders did the exact same thing.
And full disclosure, just so fans know, in case they don't know, you actually spotted for Danny Smith on Saturday, so we'll cover that a little bit here in a moment, because that was quite an opportunity for you. Lap 197, more contenders with Jerry Kunz Jr. in the lead get taken out. Brian Gerster, Troy DeCare get tangled up in an incident, but that lap on 197 opened the more conventional pit window, and that's when Kunz, Windham, Jacob Wilson, and Bobby Santos came in. And man, that was the first look we had at winner Jacob Wilson's pit stops. And man, were they ever on it Saturday night?
Yeah, they absolutely were. Those guys, Wilson brothers up in Crawfordsville, they're a well-financed operation, but they're not an unlimited budget team, but they optimize what they have. And those guys told me they've been practicing, here and there for the past couple of weeks, getting things ready. And it absolutely pays off. They've got the equipment to do it. They've got the people to do it. And they've got the family and the team ready to do it. Between Jacob in the seat, you've got his brother Clinton, crew chief, and you've got Sean Grimes there working as well. You know, a few other people throwing in, Dad Mark, Mom Diane, everybody. You know, all hands on deck when that car hits the pit lane. And they've got that spot that they like to have year after year. They were in about the same spot the past couple of years. And, you know, they made the most of it. And they had some kid, who was their spotter this year? I forget the name of the guy.
Yeah, some guy named Gordon. I don't remember what his name was. I think Eric Gordon, possibly? Yeah. I heard he's won a race or two.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
But,
so they had a lot of knowledge up on the pit box. And actually, that's the first time Jacob has had a spotter, he said, was when Eric Gordon came on board to help this year. He said his mom helps out a little bit from time to time, but for having an actual event-long sponsor, that's the first spotter Jacob Wilson's had.
That's pretty incredible. And one other thing about that, too, is when you walk through the pit lane, I usually try to say, I try to get a feel for, like, well, how the pit stop practice is going. I'm amazed sometimes how many people go, yeah, we found this guy yesterday. He's going to be changing the left rear. I pretty much almost crossed that person off on my list now, because if there's anyone that's going to run up front and you're going to, if you're near the front and you have any semblance of order to your pit stop, you are going to beat that person out of the pits.
Yes. Yeah, the days of the dump cans, the days of the just roughshod, we might change two, we might change three. I mean, everybody knows. I was talking to a car, it was Jason Fuller in his first race. They told me they changed rear tires that first pit stop, but they didn't think they needed to change the right front. The moment they went back out, they realized they'd made a mistake. 80 laps later, they were in changing the right front tire. That's what happens when nothing against the 19, but they just hadn't had the experience. It was their first race to realize that right front tire has to be a part of the equation when you're changing the rear tires. And that's what you see other guys doing, is changing tires in a concert, and optimizing that pit stop.
And during that pit sequence, Wilson leapfrogged at least four or five cars in the order on the lap he was on. And then when it went back to green, another top contender went down just after Bobby Santos had thrown a huge slider on Brian Tyler. Like, literally, I was in the front row of the press box. Like, couldn't have been more in front of me than what it was. It was one of those kind of flinch moments, even though I'm, 30, 40 feet away. It's like, whoa, this is going to be tight. And shortly thereafter, Tyler's miserable little 500 week came to a grinding, smoking halt in the 51 car. But still just a Herculean effort to get that car out, because Brian was telling me that thing wasn't even put together after his big accident on Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. Having the engine expire was almost a merciful demise to Brian Tyler's little 500 week. He told me that car, they put that car together in roughly 10 hours. It had an engine sitting in it. But about everything else was scattered across the shop there at Bowman's when that car came to life, literally out of the ashes, for him to be able to put it in the show. But then, it it went away. So.
Yeah, that's just, like you said, that hit on Tuesday. If you haven't seen the photos going around social media, that car, that is one of the most demolished sprint cars I've ever seen anyone on blacktop actually walk out of. That was a heck of a hit during the practice session.
Yeah, that came across my social media as well. And it's pretty rare that you see a sprint car with parts hanging off the left side and the right side of it. It literally walked into the middle of the chassis and split the chassis, you know, inside out. And it was right up there in that same spot where, you know, Tyler Lorig hit, you know, a couple weeks earlier. Brian and I were kind of, you know, offhand commenting that I don't think Turn 3 likes people with the name Tyler, you know, this year for whatever reason. But, you know, speaking of just half a second, got to say glad to hear Tyler Lorig's on his way back up. He was originally scheduled to pilot the Speed Chaser 64 that Jeff Kaiser ended up finishing fourth in. But, you know, due to some circumstances, he wasn't able to compete this year. But look forward to seeing him back up and healthy, and so happy that Brian Tyler was able to walk away and come back and compete this weekend. Two hard hits already to Anderson this spring.
Yeah, and that's an area that's kind of notorious on that racetrack. We've seen several people get hurt over there in that spot, and it's definitely kind of the attention-grabbing spot of that racetrack. Because it is, you know, for people that haven't been there, Anderson's a lot faster than it might look on TV for sure. But even when you first look at it, you go, oh, it's kind of small. It can't really be that fast. Even from the outside, it looks fast. But when you get in the infield and watch the cars go by, they are hauling the mail around that place.
Absolutely. The shutdown points and things like that going in the corner or part of the way down the backstretch and going into three, you realize just how much they're singing it through there. Of course, the wing sprint car track record there is a 10-16, something like that. With JoJo Helbert a couple of years ago, the non-wing cars are about a second slower, you know, for their laps, maybe a little bit less than that, but they're still moving around in the high 10s, low 11s. I think the fast qualifier, Clausen, had 11 ones across the board for his qualifying mark for the Little 500 this year, and that's absolutely just getting with it around that little place. You're right, TJ. That is absolutely on it.
And one thing actually I missed before the talk about the incident with Tyler is the probably one of the more talked about incidents of the weekend involving Chris Windham and Rex Norris III. I didn't see what started it, but I definitely saw the aftermath because I was looking up from typing. All of a sudden, I see Chris Windham hauling across the infield. And, I mean, it couldn't have been more right on the start-finish line. We got a tackle, a takedown, punches were thrown, and it was absolutely insane as the fight went on. You always see the signs joking, if you fight in the pits, it's a fine. But if you do it on the front straight, you're going to do it. You do it on the front straightaway. Well, they couldn't have done it more on the front straightaway than what they did.
It was. It was right out there in front of God and everybody. And it was just, they had been racing hard together lap after lap. And I think Windham thought that he was getting held up. And they ended up together. Norris ended up in the fence. And Windham ended up down the track a little bit. And Rex was walking away, and I think, you know, I think there were probably some words getting said and things like that. But like you said, all of a sudden, here comes the bear, and he got a two-point takedown, and Norris went for the reversal, and they pulled him apart. But it was longer than what it took to talk about it. They were at it before people really realized what was going on.
Yeah, I think I was the first one in the tower to see it. I went, fight! I couldn't believe everyone's head just snapped around where I was looking. We were all looking at disbelief. Who knew that we'd see bear wrestling at the Little 500 as an added attraction, thanks to Rex Norris and Chris Windham.
Yep, yeah, but that's the heat of the moment, and that's what these guys, that's what they're into it for. I mean, it's not a soft glove affair. I mean, these guys are out there racing hard every lap, and there's hard feelings when the bad things happen like that. And you wouldn't want it any other way. You don't like to see them fight, but you like to see the aggression. You like to see the hard racing and things like that. That's what the Little 500 is all about.
So after those guys went to the penalty box, we continued on. And another kind of incident similar that was a little bit interesting for a while we were watching is when Shane Cottle's up in the lead, and Kyle Hamilton, who had gotten involved in a spin about five laps into the race, it was about 10 maybe, and he'd been struggling to get laps back. And right after he gets a lap back from Cottle, because they were racing each other hard, he gets turned right afterwards, which got some of the crowd's ire going. I could even hear the crowd going, actually our social media, webcast blew up as soon as Cottle, and Hamilton got together right after that from people that were actually there at Anderson voicing their displeasure with it. It was kind of interesting, but that's kind of, what we saw a lot of on Saturday night, because we had guys like Kyle Hamilton and Brian Costa that got done early, and those guys just didn't roll over. They went up, elbows up, and they tried to get those laps back.
Absolutely, and because the pace of the race and the way that race changes literally on a dime at a moment's notice, Kyle Hamilton had to be aggressive, had to get going. And there were times that he, you know, wanted to use place on the racetrack that was already occupied by another competitor, and he got into him. Plain and simple, it happened. I heard it from a couple people after the race that, you know, that driver raced us hard, but the car owner didn't deserve to pay the bill for it.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just one of those where they check it up in their memory, and they're going to, you know, they're going to settle it out with whoever they need to feel like they settle it out with at some point down the road. But Kyle Hamilton, I mean, he brought the car home in a top five finish, I believe. But he was definitely one of the fastest cars, just didn't have the track position and really the luck at times to get it completely clean.
And I think it's more imperative of how important it is not to spin out, especially early in that race. Because it early in the race, there's so many cars left on the track, it takes you so long to get turned back around and get pushed off. You're going to lose at least three laps if you spin out within the first 150, I would say.
Yes, yeah, you're going to lose laps regardless, because Anderson Speedway and Kenny, the safety director there, are absolutely sticklers for making sure that the track is safe for their workers to go out and approach a race car. So you're really going to pay, it's like playing, and I know a lot about the rough when I've golfed, but it's like at the U.S. Open where they grow the rough real high and you're going to take a penalty basically for getting off the fairways. That's the same thing at the Will 500. It's going to cost you some laps because of that. It's not just a hit and go. You're down the lap and all of a sudden you can charge back. It's going to cost you significantly. And now you're going to be, you know, chipping out of the rough, so to speak, for a while, trying to get back into action. Even though you might be completely fast like Kyle Hamilton and some of the other guys were, it's still going to be a deficit. You just can't get it back in a couple of corners.
Key point to me in the race that probably was the watershed moment for Wilson, lap 341, when he came in the pits for his second stop and his crew got him out in time to be on the same lap as Cottle and the other guys that short pitted on 325. That was as incredible as that first stop was. The second one might have been even better. Someone said they clocked it in the pits at just a tick under 30 seconds, which is incredible.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. They put it out there what they had to do. They knew they could do it because I knew what their practice times had been. And they told me they could get a car in and out in about 30 seconds and do the work. And they had to put it down, and they did. And that's what champions do. From that point on, you saw what it means to be a race winner in the Little 500. And the strategy and the schedule of how they attacked the rest of the race was what a winner does. It's what we've seen Eric Gordon do time and time and time and time again, is that exact same thing. And Wilson's did it their way, but it was that exact same flavor of, here we go. We've got a date with the front of the field, and it's time to get there. And that's what they did.
So Wilson caught leader Shane Cottle on lap 371, but the pass was much easier than we thought, because Cottle's engine cut loose on lap 386. And what a miserable week for the Contos Racing team. That's their home race. And it seems like to me, mm-hmm. the Little 500 to them is either feast or famine. I mean, they either do real well, they put it in victory lane, or I've seen years where they've had some of the most awful luck of any team there in the pit area.
Yep. A couple of years ago, I remember when it was so hot, we got rained out on a Saturday, we came back on a Sunday, we run it, and it was so hot, and both cars overheated within five or six laps of each other and came in, and it was just like, oh my gosh, now, you know, you thought you had a shot at it with one and then the other, and then they were just both parked, and it is. It's feast or famine. It's a good way to put it for the Contos team, but I'll tell you what, that team has a lot of feast in them too.
Yeah, and one other driver I want to give a shout-out whose finish might not necessarily indicate how well they ran was Chris Neuenschwander. Holy cow, that kid – even mid-race, he ran top five a majority of that race. Unfortunately, got caught up in a little incident coming off turn four, got in the fence, and just about had it saved, and then hit one of the infield barriers on the front straightaway. But that kid did a heck of a job in Ron Kohler's beast car on Saturday.
Yeah, they Tony Neuschwander and the family have had that car for a few months prepping it, getting it ready to go. Every time I see him, it's, man, we're going to have something for him. And matter of fact, I talked to Chris Wednesday night, and he told me Dad had me out on 200-lap old tires, and we were in the 11.9s and so on. And Chris was a little down in the mouth about it, and I said, well, Chris, you know, if everything goes right, you're going to be on 200-lap tires Saturday night. You got to know. And he kind of gave me a grin. He said, you think? And I said, yeah, you know, if that's what it's going to be, buddy, you've got to be there. And I'll tell you what, they were. That incident that you're speaking of with him on the front stretch, that was an incident with Kyle Hamilton. They got a little too close, and Chris got the short end of the stick. Thought he had it saved going across the front of the turn four pit lane, got to the grass, and it was gone because the grass just slicked up, and it was all over. He bumped the jersey barrier. They pulled him back. Again, lost a couple laps, but got back in the hunt, and most importantly, shook the cobwebs and the fire out of his head and got back to racing. And that's what it takes when that kind of thing happens. For a kid that had a pretty rough race last year here, they had a right front wheel lockup. They got seized up on the hub. They couldn't get it off. They were just behind the ball the whole time. This year, a lot better luck. Hate to see them have the incident they did, but it was just a little shunt, and they were able to continue. And, yeah, a sixth-place finish for that team. And, again, you know, local guys that don't really know USAC racing or big-time racing all that much, but they're absolutely competitive in the Auto Value Series, the Musty Racing Series, things like that with the wings. Those guys know how to get it done, and they came down here, and they showed it this weekend. Very proud of those guys.
Talking about lap 477 is a good opportunity to talk about your experience this week.
We don't have to talk about that. We can move on.
Yeah, well, it's a good chance to at least bring up. You had the opportunity to spot for Danny Smith with the Mike Blake Racing Team in the Little 500, and it's pretty cool because Danny Smith has technically won the Little 500 as a co-driver. They stuck him in a car back when they needed relief drivers in the 70s. He hadn't done it since, what, 79, I believe it was, maybe earlier than that?
He filled in for Wayne Rudeman the last few laps of that race. Wayne had it covered by about 10 laps and couldn't stay in the car. Danny got in, filled in the last 10 laps or so. They actually had a 10-lap lead. It took him 9 laps to get him in the car, and he limped the car home to get the win. But, yeah, that's the last time, I believe, the last time he was at Anderson Speedway was for that event. So he raced the wing race with us in the Must-See Series Wednesday night, and then, you know, changed the car over, and they went for the Little 500 on Saturday.
And Danny had talked to us at an interview, actually off the air when we had him on a couple weeks ago, that he was actively looking for a ride at that point. He had not called Mike Blake. And he said, I'm going to call Mike Blake, and I did not know this. He said, yeah, because Mike gave me my first sprint car ride in 1974. First time he ever drove a sprint car was for Mike Blake. How incredible of a full circle is that? And then, I mean, for you, you don't get the spot for a National Sprint Car Hall of Fame person every day, an inductee, so that had to be pretty cool.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, it was neat because a few years ago, I started spotting for Mike Blake. We had Tate Marsh, Kevin Feeney, a couple other people in the race cars over the years, been with the Must-See Racing and the television coverage. I was a part of that, working the pits. And this year, the program has changed a little bit. We're going to do it a little bit different way. And so I was able to spot on race day. And Mike called me and said, Scotty, I need you. Let's go. And I said, okay. And all of a sudden, it's, hey, you know, you're working with Danny Smith. And we sat and we talked for about 45 seconds what he wants to hear on the radio, this and that. And we went out and we seemed to have a pretty good time of it till, like I said a minute ago, we realized we had warped the left front brake rotor in that final practice. We couldn't get it changed out in time. And so we started out the race literally handicapped with that front end chattering on that left front brake rotor. So we stayed low, we stayed out of the way, and we let the attrition tend to take its toll on the field. And we were actually up in, I believe, 13th or 12th.
You're up to 12th, actually, according to the scoring. So, yeah.
12th. Yeah, and we went down into turn three. It was just after the Gamester Doug Deach incident down in turn two, and we went into turn three. And you know, again, we were on our own lap. We weren't really racing anybody, and we were just trying to stay low. We went in there, and from my angle spotting in section MM up in row 11, seat one, I had a real good look down into three. It looked like there was room between us, and the 69 car came in. And he didn't have brakes. He had lost brakes earlier in the night. We all know that. And the cars just got close together, and he rotated, and we got together with him, and we ended up in the fence, and our night was done.
Yeah, but just so there's just to quell the rumors, there was no cigarette break during the pit stop for Danny Smith. He made it the whole way without a cigarette, and I thought he did a great job. I mean, for a guy that says his age, and you know what cracked me up was, you know, we always joke about Danny Smith. Yeah, he needs a cigarette every now and then in the pits and stuff. Dude, he looked good after that race. I mean, he didn't even look winded or anything. He looked fine.
Well, when a guy runs 477 or whatever it lasted, where we were 455 or something like that when the incident happened. But he got out of the car, you know, got his fire suit off. By the time the race was over, they were headed out. He'd had a couple cigarettes, headed out, had a beer, and they rolled the dirt car out, which was fitted next to us, rolled the dirt car out, and they're prepping it. He's at Lawrenceburg on Sunday night.
Actually, tonight.
Or is it tonight? I'm sorry. Yeah, they went to Lawrenceburg yesterday. But, yeah, they're racing tonight down there. Yeah. So it's just boom. You know, there's no rest for the weary. It's just that's the life that Danny Smith has led out of Chillicothe, Ohio for how many years now? And, you know, it's just time to go to another race, and off we go.
And, you know, but an awesome experience for you. It was awesome for the Lowell 500, too, to see him there. And Danny seemed to actually really enjoy the experience, too. I talked to him just as I sent out of the gate, and he seemed to be glad that he got to do it one more time.
He really did. It was really cordial. You know, sometimes when you don't know people and you're thrust into that situation, you don't know how it's going to go. But he was very easygoing, unassuming, let Mike make the changes and the adjustments to the car. Wish we could have put a better horse under him. But, you know, again, the mark of a veteran, you know, he kept the car down and out of the way. We got past 550 times, give or take 1,000 on Saturday night. And we were, you know, the one of the slower cars out there, but we stayed out of the way. We tried to stay down and keep, you know, the racing moving. But like I said, we were 12th. We were ahead of a lot of cars for various sorts of reasons. But when it came right down to it, we were the cause of the final yellow flag of the night.
And, of course, at the end of the night, Jacob Wilson ending up with the victory. What's also kind of cool, Jerry Coons Jr. in the V6, rookie of the race. Jerry Coons Jr. around 40-ish is your rookie of the race. That was pretty cool. Also, JoJo Helberg, who did not have a good week, used that short pit strategy and ended up with a top three finish.
Helberg ended up with a top three finish. He's another one that lost the brake. The rear brake caliper was actually riding outside of the chassis, just kind of dangling around out there. He lost brakes, I believe, at 267. So he was another guy that was just letting the car roll for the last half of the race. Teammates of Jared Andretti, they prepped two cars. He told me that was a challenge that he wasn't looking forward to, but he was glad he had the chance to do it. Learned a lot from that experience. But JoJo Helberg, a real strong finish for the kid out of California.
And, of course, we've already given Jacob Wilson tons of accolades, but, I mean, that family, that crew, another incredible win for them. And I think there might be a new king of the hill in Anderson, man. I mean, it looks like, you know, when we go into the 2015 Little 500, to me, Jacob Wilson is the kid you're going to have to knock off the top of the mountain.
Yeah. Yep, the road to the Little 500 now goes through Crawfordsville. Those guys have a good program, a strong program together. You know, we talked about the top three. I really got to take a second and talk about that Speed Chasers 64 car. That was a first-time entry with Jeff Kaiser and Tom Brewer and that Speed Chasers team finishing fourth. They were beyond ecstatic. They had no idea what they were getting into, but they said, you know, we're going to do it and see what happens. And Jeff Kaiser, former Hoosier Outlaw Sprint Series champion, not a lot of non-winning experience. I think he only had about 20 laps in that car before they qualified it on Thursday. And here they come home top four finish with that black 64 car.
He is a highly underrated race car driver. Jeff Kaiser seems to go good in anything, but I imagine the team was excited, but I don't think Jeff gets is ecstatic about anything. He's one of the most level people I've ever met in my life. He could just
he had a list of things that went wrong that, you know, if we would have done this, I put up tonight on Facebook, I said, everybody give me your excuses as to why you didn't win the race. And, of course, Jacob Wilson comes back and says, I got nothing. But Jeff Kaiser Kaiser said, I hit everything with the pace car. No, yep. Jeff, you didn't. Jeff, you know, come on.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely great job for the kid.
Yeah, if you're looking for a ray of sunshine, don't go see Jeff. But if you want an honest opinion, he's a good guy to go to. We have him on the show quite a bit, and he knows we like to joke around. But yes, he to me is one of the most underrated guys in that deal, and it would be interesting. He said, well, you know, Tyler's going to be back in the car next year. I said, well, they've got two. Tell them to prep the wing car for you, because, to me, Kaiser's got to have a ride in that thing next year. I mean, he doesn't get many opportunities. He looks to be a hired gun. He doesn't want to do his own deal anymore. But, I mean, he would be a guy I would definitely look to put in the seat there at the Lowell 500.
Absolutely. He's had success in his own equipment. He's had success in the Swanson 7 cars. Had a short stint with the bio-based team, teammate to Jimmy McCune. He's run some other stuff. Of course, he's been in the Speed Chasers entries, that kind of thing. Anybody that would be interested in seeing the front third of a race needs to think about calling Jeff Kaiser there in Fort Wayne. The kid is smart between the ears. He's smart in the race strategy, things like that. He's a very, very underrated racer. Best thing you can say about him right there.
Yeah, and I mean, another little 500 under our belts, man. It was a great race and a great night. It was like I said, it was like riding a roller coaster. Up and down with everyone, and see Jacob Wilson, see a family like that get the win again was really neat in front of that many people. One thing though, a lot of people were like, talking about the night before the 500 and the lack of cars there, and they're like, well, look, we've got all these cars, we got more running at the end of the race here than they had at IRP, but there were only 34 cars that tried to qualify this year. Do we think we're seeing maybe a few less cars because of the car quality going up?
The car quality was definitely up this year, and there was a lot of internet scuttlebutt about the quality of cars that were coming in February and March, things like that. Chris Windham said he was going to be there. Brian Clausen, the Jerry Coon situation, things like that. There were a lot of top-notch drivers in top-notch equipment coming to the show. You look around, and there was some guys that have good equipment but can't afford to ante up to field a car for that race and not make it. And so there were cars nearby that could have filled the field out. I guarantee that. I mean, there's cars right there in Anderson that would have been there had the field been short to fill the field out to make some bump. But even in the back of the field, there wasn't a lot of room back there in that last row for an off the pace car, so to speak, to make the race. And that's what you saw in that event. Grant Galloway started next to us there in the 35 car. He moved up through the field. He actually finished 19th with a broken rear end somewhere around lap 270 or 370, something like that. The rear end broke in that car. There's a rookie, but he was up and holding his pace really well. It's that back row wasn't a slouch row of cars. It was just the fact that, like you say, we had top-notch equipment all the way through that field from front to back.
And one thing I like to say is a good lesson from this race. If you look at Doug Deitch, Doug's a guy that has toyed with doing this for a couple of years. And last year he said he was going to do it and then decided the last minute he wasn't going to do it. Well, this year he finally bit the bullet, and he was even hemming and hawing with me, during the week. Man, I don't know, if we should be doing this or not. Once he got done with it, he ran a smart, smooth race, ended up with a good finish. He would have actually maybe ended up with the top 10. He not got tangled up with someone in turn two. But he's a guy that just goes to Spartan. It's not a high dollar operation, but went in there, used his head, finished the race, and you get a good finish out of it. And I mean, I don't necessarily think if you can make the race and you're smart and you have a halfway decent car, you have a really good shot at finishing in the first third of the top third of the field.
Doug Deitch absolutely proved that the mind is the most valuable piece of equipment that you put on the track that night. He doesn't have, like you said, he didn't have the top shelf equipment, but he knew his stuff, and he knew the quality of it, he knew the durability of it, and that he could make it last. And that's what it took to get through there. I was just tickled to see the Zero car run all the laps. We raced with him for quite a few laps through the course of the night ourselves, ran a good solid line, was courteous but aggressive. That's what you need. And Doug was absolutely a joy to share the racetrack with on Saturday night.
Well, Scott, we did it. We survived another one, and now we just get to look forward to next year.
Absolutely. Do a little wing racing through the rest of the summer and then set back for a long winter, do the Fort Wayne indoor races, do the Sitting Bull there, and then get ready for the Little 500 again next spring.
Well, Scott, thanks for helping us break down the Little 500 again, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road with some must-see stuff coming up later on this summer.
Absolutely. Just want to say that the race was recorded. It's going to be tape delayed and be out on all the traditional outlets and things like that. It's a new outlets. Keep an eye on the web, the Anderson Speedway website and other places. I'm sure TJ Slideways will be the place to look for it to find out where the Little 500 will be on TV again this year.
And don't forget also, in August, fans, we're going to break down the Little 500 with the Little 500 past, present, and future in our guest lineup so far for that panel, the Wednesday of the Knoxville Nationals, 10:30 a.m., second floor of the Hall of Fame building at Knoxville, Iowa. It's going to be Danny Smith. Tony Elliott is going to join us. I mean, Brian Gerster said that he's going to try to maybe join us for that event as well. So we have a pretty good panel, and Dave Argerbright already committed to it as well. So it's going to be a great event over there at the Hall of Fame, and make sure to check us out there. Well, Scott, thanks for helping us break it down, and like I said, we'll see you again later this summer.
Thank you.
All right, Scott Stein from the Must See Racing Series. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, Joe Bears. You're listening to TJ Slideways Live here on RacesOnTheWeb.com.
Engine Pro, the nation's leading specialty engine parts distributor, featuring name brand engine parts and custom engine kits sold by professional rebuilders. With 29 distribution centers providing engine builders and machine shops across the country with a full line of brand name internal engine components at competitive prices. Engine Pro is committed to building the success of their customers by offering competitive pricing, innovative programs, and knowledgeable sales representatives. For more information, visit our website at engineproparts.com. It pays to know a pro. Engine Pro.
If you're looking to add a little edge to your racing program, repair your engine, maybe even look into a new engine, Bailey Racing Engines of Coldwater, Michigan is a fine supporter of TJSlideways.com. Visit them online at BaileyEngines.com or call them at 517-278-8488.
Tired of having black headers that rust and wear out too quickly? Then you need to get some Rocket Headers. Rocket Header produces exhaust for 360 and 410 sprint car engines, dirt and pavement, with mufflers and turnouts. Stainless steel construction, TIG welding, and polished finish make Rocket Headers the best value in the open wheel racing exhaust market. For more information on where to buy Rocket Headers, visit their official website at rocketheaders.com.
All-Star Performance is a manufacturer and supplier of racing and high-performance auto parts, accessories, and specialty tools. From quarter midgets to sprint cars, All-Star Performance has all of the accessories you need. To find a dealer near you, visit allstarperformance.com.
TJ Buffenbarger here for the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa. The Hall of Fame continues to promote the future of sprint car racing by preserving its past. The museum is located in Knoxville, Iowa, and is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. On race nights, the museum will stay open until 7 o'clock. Don't forget, race fans, one of the best ways that you can support the Hall of Fame is buying a membership. They start at just $25, and a basic membership gets you and a guest free admission to the museum and a 10% discount off in the museum store. Also, check with the Hall of Fame for suite tickets on the second and third floor for the 2013 Knoxville season. You can get information on all of this by going to SprintCarHOF.com, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Blade Shock Technology is a cutting-edge shock bump stop technology company located in Northwest Ohio. Specializing in sprint car racing, new and used sales, service, and repair, Eric Slade and his crew have over 30 years' experience working with shocks, from the short tracks to the super speedways. For more information, visit SladeShockTechnology.com. Slade Shock Technology, where knowledge and experience make the difference.
If you're looking for new or used shocks or repair for your shocks or bump stop kits, make sure to check out Slade Shock Technology. Eric Slade has experience from sprint cars to NASCARs. He was in shocks before it was trendy, and now that's the hot thing in racing. You need to get your shock program in shape. Visit www.sladeshocktechnology.com for everything they offer. Slade Shock Technology. Get with the program. Get your shocks in shape.
There's a buzz in the bleachers, a rumble on the pavement,
and the sweet smell of sprint car speed is in the air. As Muncie Racing brings you the fastest short track event on earth, watch as the most daring lead foots in the land stand on the gas and rocket around one of the fastest half miles in America. There are records to be broken and racing royalty in the pits. It's a flat-out, foot-on-the-floor sprint car fiesta, and you can't find this brand of adrenaline-soaked action anywhere else.
Welcome back to TJ Sideways Live here at racesontheweb.com. And on Sunday night, if you're watching here on the network, you watched this gentleman win the Michigan Traditional Sprints presented by Lane Automotive feature event Sunday night at Crystal. Joe Bears joining us on the line. And Joe, we're just talking off the air. Three wide pass for the lead, man, on a restart to take that puppy. And that was a hairy moment down there, and might have even made you hold your breath for just a second through turn two.
I really did, and I knew if I was going to get Birkin, it would have to be either on one of those restarts or in lap traffic, because I could see his car was getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and mine was coming into me and getting faster. And yeah, and he pulled the massive wheel stand down the front straightaway, and that was my chance. So I put her on the top side, and you know, we kind of banged wheels going through one and two, but it was this good hard race, and then I was just kind of holding my breath. Just, you know, please, Mike, give me 8 inches on this track, and I can clear you. So, but yeah, Mike's a great racer. He gave me enough room, and after that, I think it was pretty much clear sailing for us. So, but yeah, it was a good race.
And
you,
Mike, did have a lot of a good time racing for the lead there, back and forth, pretty much through the whole race.
Yeah, and that's just what makes it fun. I mean, you get around someone like Birkin, you know he's not going to do anything goofy. You know he's not going to chop you. He's going to race you hard. We banged wheels and rubbed Nerf bars a couple times, but I'm all for that, you know, and Mike's a good, hard, clean racer, and it's fun racing with those guys like that because you know what they're going to do. They're predictable, it's fun. It's always fun racing against Mike.
And you've been racing around. You've already gone to Kokomo this year and stuff. And is that pretty much going to be the plan for this season for you, is to race the MTS schedule and then do some fill-in dates at Kokomo and a few other places?
That's actually kind of the opposite. We were looking at schedules as they came out, and the MTS schedule was kind of late coming out. So by the time the schedule came out, we had already made commitments to a number of other deals with Kokomo and some USAC stuff that we want to do. So actually we just ended up using MTS to fill in some of the blanks. And I have some commitments. A friend of mine's getting married this summer, so I'm going to miss a couple of MTS races because of that. So running for another championship with them. Never really was in the cards just because it, you know, like I said, their schedule is kind of late coming out, but yeah, that's what we decided to do this year, is just really bounce around, travel around more, and try to run more USAC stuff.
So what USAC races that you haven't done in the past are you looking to do this season?
Right now we're planning on heading Midwest with them. We're going to do that Wisconsin-Minnesota trip with them, probably the Four Crown at Eldora, and there's a couple other down Kokomo or Gasset that will fill in with them. But yeah, the Minnesota-Wisconsin trip, we're planning on definitely doing that swing.
All right, so Minnesota and Wisconsin listeners, you're going to get to see the top cop for the first time making his way through that part of the country. And something else I've seen you've been doing lately, you've been building a lot of pit carts. And I really didn't know this was part of your repertoire. So how did you get involved in doing that, and what are you doing with all these pit carts that you're building?
Well, really what kind of started it was I always wanted one. And just for use at home and at the track and everything else. But now you look at new ones, and you know, they're looking at $5,000-$6,000 for, you know, for just a average size one with a toolbox, and it was just always out of reach. And I look at stuff that other people built, and it was just obviously home built or beat up and kind of ugly. So I'm like, I'll just make my own. So probably about 3 years ago, I made my own, and I got so many compliments on it. I'm like, well, I'll try building another one, just putting it up for sale. And I sold it within a week, and they ordered another one, and it's just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, and I just kind of my business model is kind of the first affordable, you know, pit cart is, you know, I'm not knocking the competition at all. You know, like pitcarts.com, Ricky Sanders, I think Top Speed Fabrication makes pit carts too. They make really nice stuff. It's just out of reach for, you know, a lot of your average Saturday night racers. So, so kind of what I'm trying to do is just offer affordable pit carts. You know, something that a guy on a budget like mine can afford, and, you know, something that will last him for a while. And, you know, and hopefully that, you know, through building pit carts, it will help our racing program. You know, we're trying to race on another level. We're trying to, step up our program down south and with USAC and whatnot. And when you step up your program, you also got to step up your budget. so we're, starting to make a little money with it, so that will help put tires on the car and fuel in the truck to get to the races. So that's why we're doing it.
And not only that, but you don't have to drive to Traverse City to get one anymore because you're back in West Michigan.
That's been a huge, huge help. My wife and I, we were talking today. It was so nice to leave Crystal, and, you know, an hour and a half later, I'm home, and I can walk through the door and go to bed. I'm still not, you know, 3 hours from home or 6 hours from home. It's very nice being back in the West Michigan area, and it also helps with the racing, just as far as, you know, this Grand Rapids area. I mean, it's stock car country, but it's full of racing people, and that's been a great asset. Yeah, just different contacts, you know, with you know, some of the CRA teams, and Terry Van Heetsma is a big Berlin guy, and just making those connections. And it just helps out our program as well.
And probably the closest proximity guest we've ever had to the studio, about 4 miles, as the crow flies over to Joe Bear, as your feature winner Sunday night at the Crystal Motor Speedway with the Michigan Traditional Sprint. You mentioned you did step up your program quite a bit this year, but you have been a longtime DRC chassis guy. But now you've got the motor, and you've got the nice car now, and you know, but what's the next step for you, I guess? What do you guys eventually want to look at doing in the next year or two?
Really, you know, I think our equipment is as good as anybody else's out there. Really, right now, it's just me. I mean, it's up to me. I don't have any excuses. You know, I can't blame the car. I can't blame that I'm down 40 horsepower to the guys. It just comes down to me. And with that, it's just seat time. You know, that's what really hurt us down at Kokomo is, you know, the car, the power steering pump broke right away early in the night. And, you know, so you just don't get any seat time. So that's what's going to come down to is, you know, you just got to turn some light laps and be behind the wheel as much as you can and try and race more. You know, as far as our long-term goals, you know, you just want to keep improving. You want to keep getting better. And, it'd be nice to, you know, be able to go to Kokomo or Gas City and consistently compete, you know, for a top 10 finish. So that's kind of a long-term goal is, you know, we try to be realistic. You know, I know I'm not going to go to the Ford and Crown and be an upset winner, but we just want to be competitive against those guys. And I know we've done it a few times. We just haven't done it consistently. So that's what we're looking at is just increasing our, consistency down south and, you know, and like I said, getting some more top tens with them.
Well, Joe, congratulations on getting the year started off right with a feature win. And am I going to run into you on Saturday meandering the pits at the Outlaw Show, or are we going to have to cross paths sometime at a USAC show?
Right now I plan on going out there and checking out the Outlaws. So, yeah, as long as the weather looks decent, yeah, I'll be making the trip out there to spectate and cheer on the 3G car. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, and we just had McFadden on a little bit before you. So, well, Joe, congratulations. I look forward to seeing you out there on Saturday, and best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you for having me, TJ.
All right, that's Joe Bears, your winner Saturday night at the Crystal Motor Speedway. And that's going to wrap up this edition of TJ Slideways Live. I'd like to thank Cody Swanson, James McFadden, and Scott Stein for helping us break down the Little 500. Of course, Joe Bears, who was just on. We'll do this again next Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We'll review our hometown outlaw show. Make your way out to I-96 Speedway Saturday night for the first of two appearances in Michigan of the World of Outlaws STP Sprint Car Series. Thank you and good night.
for listening to this edition of TJ Slideways Live.